All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
On most nights, we're left talking about a list of players that played well, Harm. That's what most of the nights this season have been like is, did you like this guy? Yeah, I liked this guy. What'd you like about this guy? What'd you like about this guy? I made a list of the players I wanted to see more from in last night's game, Harm. I think it's too long to name every player. And of course, we're going to get into it because last night, the Vancouver Canucks fell by a final score of 6-3 to the Vegas Golden Knights. And it was not pretty. We're going to be joined by Frank Saravalli later. But first, we're going to break down last night's game. But before we do that, I need to tell you that Canucks Conversation is brought to you by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that's designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain. Whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps, the BZ4X will get you through it all. Another remote edition of Canucks Conversation will be back at the Wall Center tomorrow. My name is Dave Quadrelli. That is Harmon Dial, and it is going to be a busy show today as the Canucks play back-to-back games, and we still try to fit a conversation in with Frank Saravalli. We're going to do that in about 10 minutes time. But first, Harm, I won't even ask how you are because I know it can't be good after having to watch last night's game. Just your thoughts on last night's game.
Yeah, so on yesterday's show, I was warning that the Vegas team that the Canucks are going to play last night isn't the Vegas team that they played in early March when they met at T-Mobile Arena. In early March, it felt like the Canucks forecheck was just able to suffocate Vegas. Vegas couldn't break out against them. But how since that point, it had really... That loss against the Canucks was sort of their low point because they had been spiraling even before that game. They got dominated by the Canucks 3-1. And that since then, they've really found their game again, have started dominating play 5-on-5, and still don't even have Mark Stone and Tomas Hertl back yet. Right from the drop of the puck, you could tell that Vegas was transporting the puck so much quicker. And Ray Ferraro mentioned on the broadcast how they were spamming the weak side on the breakout, exploiting the Canucks that way. And the Canucks just really had no answers. It felt like they weren't prepared for Vegas having that onslaught of speed, of skill, of attacking in waves. And I tried to think about, okay, why perhaps did the Canucks start slow? I wonder if part of it is also, you think back to Vancouver's last game, it was against the sleepy Anaheim team on the second leg of a back-to-back. It's pretty jarring to go from that to, all right, we're now playing this Vegas team that is back playing at a Stanley Cup level. Now, that's not an excuse for it, but you can understand how the pace right from the drop of the puck in that Vegas game last night was totally different than the Sunday game that the Canucks played against Anaheim. And the Canucks were permissive off the rush in a way they just haven't been all season. It felt like a throwback to Bruce Boudreau era defensive hockey with the number of rush chances they were giving up.
You brought up the forecheck and you brought up Vegas breaking the puck out. Tocchet criticized his team after the game, talking about how they weren't going through guys and there was guys letting up, and that was leading to odd man rushes against. He called out four players. He just said four players aren't playing well enough type thing. And I was trying to think back, and again, I'm not going to do the thing where we try to name who he's talking about, but one guy that I did think was a little bit guilty of maybe letting up a bit on the forecheck and it leading to an odd man rush. I thought about it with the JT Miller line. Like, I thought JT Miller had an instance of doing that. I thought maybe Garland as well. But again, I'm not trying to sit here and say that's who he's talking about when he says there's four guys not playing well enough. I just think those guys were an example of an odd man rush going against the Canucks because they may have let up a little bit on the forecheck, which again, you don't want to see. You don't want to see it. And the thing that I found really interesting about last night's game, Harm, I mean, we'll get to it after because it was a quote from Tocchet, and I think it kind of transitions us a bit, so we'll wait. But this list that I have of players that didn't play well enough, it's too long to name everybody, so I won't. But I'll tell you the guys at the top of the list for me. Archdeep Baines, already talking about him in the chat. Archdeep Baines is getting a lot of conversation about him in the chat. And that's the thing, is it's not like, Baines sucks. It's not like that. It's just that, okay, this was maybe the first time that we've seen that he's probably not NHL ready. Like, this is the indication that we've had that, okay, he needs some more seasoning in the NHL. He's not a lost cause. It's not a failure by any means. And, you know, he shouldn't be hanging his head personally or anything. And there's still a very good chance he can continue his development. It just feels like he's not quite ready yet, just with the way he's played recently. And really last night, I feel like it was really the exclamation point on his performances lately.
Yeah, he's looked a little slow on the transitions from forecheck to backcheck. And you're right. I also just think, looking at his overall body of work, that you'd have to go back to the Colorado game, his NHL debut, to look at the latest example of him having a legitimately good game at the NHL level. Because the other games, yeah, he's been fine. He's been able to sort of tread water. But the last time he was noticeably impactful in a positive game was the first game we saw against Colorado. So I think that is also a sign where sometimes with young players, they go through the highs and the lows, right? And this would be an example of a low point. I also think part of why Baines isn't NHL ready is we haven't seen the highs consistently enough to see the promise for, okay, let's stick it out. Let's let him grow and develop here. I don't think there's that upside there yet. And I think now with a performance like that, he should be below the depth chart compared to options like PDG and even Nils Lehmann.
In instant reaction last night, I wrote the line, you need to manage Ian Cole's load forever. Manage it forever. Ian Cole's load is not ready to be not managed right now. He had a really tough game. He had a really, really rough game, I thought. Just looking at the defensive end, like, we're expecting Noah Juulsen gets back in tonight. I have to think it's Ian Cole coming out of the lineup tonight in Arizona.
Yeah, 100%. Especially, like, I'm thinking about it this way. If the playoffs started tomorrow, is Ian Cole even in your top six?
No. Because I'll make the case. I don't think so. I don't.
Yeah, I'll make the case that Noah Juulsen, I trust him more defensively. I trust him more with his foot speed. Because with Cole right now, he just looks so slow, especially changing direction. If let's say there are situations where Vegas was coming at Vancouver, they dump the puck in, Cole has to turn his feet, go back for defensive zone retrieval. He was so slow on those races. So slow in trying to break the puck out, which is a sharp contrast compared to early in the season where he was consistently able to break plays up defensively and you could trust him with the puck. And I don't think you can trust him in either facet right now, in large part because it does feel like he's a step behind.
I wonder what's changed though, right? Like, I'm not like, I say manage his load, load manage him forever. I say that kind of as a joke, but like, the Ian Cole that they saw at the start of the year that guy's in the top six, right? Like that guy's 100%. In their defensive group. So what's changed?
I think a big part of it is just the age. I mean, you think about, for example, Mark Giordano, and Cole's obviously not this old. He's 35 years old, but Giordano for the Leafs last season was terrific in the regular season. He logged top 4 minutes for them, was so trusty. And by the time the playoffs arrived, he was a flat out liability. You couldn't even trust him in a third pair role. He was too mistake prone. He looked too slow. And even with Giordano in that situation, it's not that he all of a sudden forgot how to play hockey. It's just that the workload of the season started to catch up for him. And I wonder if that's the case with Cole, especially because the constant in both situations with Giordano and Cole is that foot speed is one of the concerns that you have. It's not that these guys don't know how to think the game. They know how to think the game. They know how to make the right reads. It's, can you physically get to the spots at the right times? And that's where he was too slow pinching up and got caught on one of the goals against. I really do think it's foot speed and workload and age.
Lefty all around in the YouTube live chat says, Cole out, Mikheyev out, Baines out, Juulsen in, Amon in, PDG in are my predictions. Very hard to disagree with that. There was that little stretch where you're like, Ilya Mikheyev's skating again. Ilya Mikheyev's looking all right. Seems to have come to a screeching halt already.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like, as we transition from just the game to, okay, what are we thinking big picture? What could this mean for the playoffs? One of the concerns that I'm starting to develop is now that you've got Hoglander in the top six, now that you've got Joshua in the top six, now that you've got Garland in the top six, your bottom six looks awfully thin. Are you going to get enough secondary scoring in the playoffs? And a lot of teams that have success in the playoffs, they relied so heavily on at least a third line that can control play, that can chip in with secondary offense, that can be an X factor for you in the same way that the Blueger Joshua Garland line was an X factor for the Canucks as a third line in the first half of the season. But now that you've transported three of your best bottom six drivers up into the top six, because you don't have enough top six difference makers right now, that's created a bit of a hole in the bottom six where there's not enough of an identity there. There's not enough speed there. There's not enough energy. There's not enough offense there.
You're bang on, and I wish I knew the answer, because I don't think you can afford to split up that top six. Like, if you do that, you're looking at JT Miller with like Sam Lafferty and Ilya Mikheyev as his wingers, right? Like that's what we're looking at. We don't know when Elias Lindholm's going to come back, and really how much of an upgrade is Elias Lindholm right now with the way he's played. And obviously he's going through an injury as well right now. So I don't know. There's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of questions, and there's 7 games left in the regular season. It feels crazy to say that, but let's get to this clip from Rick Tocchet from last night, Grady, where he talked about how the team needs to figure it out soon, because you can't just flip a switch to the playoffs. And the reason I bring this up, Harmon, and want to play this clip is because for the past couple of weeks, I've been focusing a lot on the power play, and I've been saying, okay, I'm not too concerned about the 5-on-5 play because I know they can get back to their stables. They can do all these things, confident in that. But to hear Rick Tocchet come out and say, no, we've got to right this ship soon, and we've got to do it before the playoffs. It's not easy to switch it on and off. That, to me, should start to sound off the alarm bells just a little bit. Let's hear the clip.
I didn't go out after tonight. Hopefully they talked about it, but we got to regroup tomorrow. Got to get these guys energized for against Arizona. You got to get the negativity out of yourself now. But as a player, you know, it's not so much negative. You got to look at yourself, how I can do better. We've got some individuals that they got to start to have that fight a little bit more will right now. You can't save it. You can't save it for 2 more weeks. It has to happen now, because it's hard to turn it on and off.
So it's interesting. And again, at the start of that clip, we didn't quite hear it, but he did say he didn't go into the room last night. He didn't even address the team after last night's game. So clearly hoping that the leadership group and the players in that room know what they need to do to have success, especially tonight against the Arizona Coyotes. Let's not make him wait any longer. Harmon, we'll maybe chat some more about the Vegas game afterwards, but let's not make him wait any longer. Let's bring in Frank Cervelli, who is brought to you by Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool game. The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's. But there's no reason you can't have both, because Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you make a few wrong picks, at least you know heading to Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon Pull Apart and small coffee is a great choice. Sign up for Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Let's bring him in. Frank, I've had one win on the Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool game. Just checking if you've had one yet.
Zero.
All right. Well, there's always next season.
You know what? In fact, I had a meeting today with the powers that be, and I said, I'm not asking for the Daily Faceoff Survivor game to be easier. Just saying, like, if we do redo this next year, perhaps we, like, change the algorithm or whatever it is, the game difficulty level, because I've gotten to day four one time, and I picked a straight-up winner, and my team lost in OT, so I've never actually won a prize this year, and I don't, like, it's not a participation ribbon. Like, we don't hand those out here at Daily Faceoff, but it is mildly mind-blowing how difficult it is.
It is, and I'll tell you, it's cool to hang my hat on the fact that I've won once, because it is extremely hard to win, and I'll tell you
that's a flex, dude. Like,
I know that Dave's double tasted better.
Think about how many weeks there are in a season, and how many, you know, days there are in terms of, if you win the week, you win four times. The total leader for $5,000 cash is at 30 correct answers.
Yeah. That's it's insane.
Not very many.
No, it's insane. And I wish I was that leader, but I'm not, unfortunately. Maybe next season. Okay, Frank, we wanted to ask you about the Canucks and just what the conversations that you've had with, you know, GMs, people around the league, like, what are the Canucks viewed as right now? Are they viewed as contenders? Are they viewed as pretenders? We just played a clip of Rick talking about how his team needs to have some urgency and needs to turn things around before the playoffs start.
So how are they viewed around the league? Are they contenders or pretenders? My answer would be somewhere in the middle. I think a lot of teams realize how talented Vancouver is and how strong their structure was at varying points of this year. I don't think anyone is necessarily quaking in their boots to face them if they were to end up being the one seed out of the Pacific. And that's not a knock against them. It's just that the West is so good, you're going to have to go through good teams regardless. And so are the Canucks more feared or less feared than Vegas, even though they're going to finish ahead of them in the standings? The answer is Vegas is more feared. Now, that's a different question and a different answer than my level of concern for Vancouver right now. And I would say it's like a 7. It's not nothing, but the fact that the games always at this point in the year get harder, the difficulty level ratchets up in a big way, the compete, that I'm a little bit surprised that this team that's had a lot of those elements all season long is suddenly missing some of the consistency marks of that. And the other part is that teams are also just playing better. So they're not rising to that level. So part of it's on them. Part of it is matching what's being thrown at them. And I think there's plenty of time left to right the ship. But I do think that this Canucks team, having not had a ton of playoff experience, could probably use going in to feel more confident than they are right now.
Frank, are you a believer in the concept that a team needs to be peaking heading into the playoffs, then that they need to be playing their best hockey at the conclusion of the regular season to maximize their odds of playoff success? Or are you a believer that the playoffs are just completely different and what you did in game 82 doesn't really matter?
I tend to lean towards it not mattering as much, because I think we've seen plenty of examples of teams that look at the Florida Panthers last year. And I hate the idea that everyone brings up the 8 seed and the miracle run. That's not what I'm getting at here. And by the way, that's a bullshit narrative for that Florida team because they won the President's Trophy the year before that and were clearly talented. What the reason I brought it up is because, and the point I wanted to make is they lost, quite literally lost their way into the postseason last year. They were down and out. And if not for the Pittsburgh Penguins absolutely gagging on it at home against the Chicago Blackhawks, the Panthers wouldn't have been in the playoffs. So I don't know that you necessarily need to be at your absolute best. But what you do need to recognize is what Rick Tocchet is saying is that if you think this is hard, it's only going to be five times harder when it comes to the playoffs and you better get ready for it. There's another narrative though, that's going to be really interesting to watch unfold when it comes to this Canucks team. And that is the idea or philosophy that somehow you needed to have lost along the way. And that's one that I think the Canucks are really, they're in a position to challenge because unlike even the Kings who have lost 2 years in a row to the Oilers in the first round, they at least have some taste of it. This Canucks team, yeah, I guess you could maybe look back at the bubble and say there's maybe a little bit of it, but it's a totally different team, different coach, different everything to me that I say, how do they react when they're thrown into the pressure cooker and the deep end of the pool? We'll see. But it's an interesting narrative to try and challenge because almost every team that you can think of that's broken through and won the Stanley Cup, none of them really did it on the first try.
Frank, what the hell's going on in the East? We're looking at the East wild cards. I don't even want to call it a race. We're looking at it, and one of these teams is going to make the playoffs.
One of these teams is going to finish 4-4-2 and make the playoffs. That's what it feels like. My money would be on the Flyers and the Caps, but I don't have any evidence to really even support that. You know, you would think from a pure talent perspective that Detroit would get it together. The Penguins are suddenly, they've doubled their playoff chances, still only 10%, but they were hovering around 5 a few days ago. They're suddenly alive because no one's really putting it to bed. No one's running away. All someone needed to do was go like 7-2-1 in a 10-game stretch, and this thing's over. We're not even talking about it. But they're allowing teams to linger, and it's kind of, in an uninteresting way, creating some drama.
Whether it's the East or the West, what potential playoff matchups do you most want to see happen?
I always root for chaos. So for me, and you didn't ask first round or second, but even just from a first round perspective, Edmonton, Vegas, a rematch of last year's second round, that's tremendous. At any point, giving me Dallas and Colorado is going to be an absolute heavyweight tilt. And out East, I mean, Florida, Boston will be good if that happens. I think even any team facing the Leafs is always some pretty quality drama, but we could also potentially get a lot of things would need to happen, but we could potentially get, with the Panthers having lost 8 of 10, Florida and Tampa, it's going to be hard, but still possible in round one, that would be pretty good. And by the way, it feels like they've met a bunch recently, but Rangers, Carolina would be quite good too.
Frank, will you give us a Stanley Cup prediction? You don't have to give us both teams, just who's going to win the cup?
So I picked Dallas before the season started. I don't really see any real reason to move off of that pick. I would love to see a Dallas-Florida Cup final just because two teams that I think have a heaviness to their game, a physicality, and also loads of skill and depth. I don't know what that would do for TV ratings. Probably not much. Another all sort of Sun Belt Stanley Cup final that people in Canada kind of yawn when they hear, but the hockey would be undeniably good.
Frank, is there a top 10 NHL team that is widely viewed as a cup contender that you're maybe not fully sold on?
The Bruins. I like their, like, they might win the President's Trophy for the second year in a row. I don't want to continue to pick at the scab of their center position and how that's a weakness. And with all due respect to the amazing season that Charlie Coyle has had, for what was expected of him, he's way exceeded expectations, and their goaltending continues to be great. And I really like their defense. I just, to me, I know they've had a good regular season, and I don't know if it's just last year that kind of sticks out to me, but there's something about them that I don't really like, and I don't know exactly what that is. And I'm really not sold on the Winnipeg Jets, and I haven't been sold on the Jets for a long time. They just don't score enough for me, and their top line has been in shambles of late. They're not playing well down the stretch. Their power play, which was dreadful for most of the season, that finally turned around after picking up Sean Monahan, is now back in a rut. And their penalty kill hasn't been great either. So Connor Hellebuck could be the equalizer of all equalizers. That's a lot of heavy lifting to do to get 16 wins. Not all on your own, but a lot of it will have to be on his back.
There's going to be a lot of heavy lifting in Arizona, it would seem. You reported that the Coyotes don't have the green light to make contract offers next season. Canucks play the Coyotes tonight, so it's a bit topical, but can you expand on that report?
Yeah, I would say that it's not all contract offers. Like, if they were offering someone an entry-level deal or a small sort of, one-year, small-term, small-dollar deal, like, could they get that done? Yeah, they could. But they're not going to be lopping a 7 or 8 year offer for 50 some million dollars onto someone's plate right now. No, they do not have the green light to do that. And it's due to the influx of the franchise. Are they moving? Are they relocating? Are they going to be in Arizona? They've got basically 7 weeks to figure this out. And until that happens, until we have clarity one way or the other, is Alex Mariello going to continue owning this team? Then they don't have that ability at this moment in time, at least what I'm told.
Frank, just before we let you go, are you in favor of expanding the playoffs?
I could be. I would love to see a play-in. I know that Gary Bettman has said that he doesn't like the idea of it. He feels like it kind of cheapens it. And also, like, if we're being honest, the NHL doesn't like it when other teams steal their ideas, especially ones that they've had first, which they've been really good at some things, including coaches challenge and reviews. And there's a lot of things that the NHL has gotten right over their time that they, feel like they didn't get enough credit for from other leagues that stole some of those ideas. I think the fact that the NBA has the play-in first, it kind of hurts the NHL because they're like, we don't want to copycat anyone, even though I think it makes perfect sense. I also love the in-season tournament, by the way. The season's too long, 82 games, that 60 of them, like, you just like shrug after and you're like, well, they lost, but there's always next one. And that's just the truth of the nature of how long the season is. I'd love to see more importance placed in games that are sort of run of the mill, or at least were on the schedule. And to bring it back to the increased playoff, like, on the one hand, I think it's the best tournament in sports and it's definitely the toughest trophy to win, but that doesn't mean that a good thing can't be even better. The one thing that really sucks about the Stanley Cup playoffs is that the first round is by far the best. And as you get to the final, it gets worse. Whereas in basketball, it's the other way around. The first round sucks, and when you get to the finals, it's like unbelievable. And I don't know how the NHL transcends that. Part of it is these players are just beat to shit after going through three crazy grueling rounds with travel, that by the time they get to the cup final, look at Florida last year, wasn't even a great series because half their lineup, it felt like, needed offseason surgery that, oh, by the way, kept most of their defense core out until December. Like, these weren't little cupcake injuries that he needs 2 weeks to heal. These are hey, this guy's having hip or hernia surgery and could barely walk, and Matthew Tkachuk needed Brady to get him out of bed on game days. Like, that's real deal stuff. And if people saw the behind the scenes of it, I think it would be so much cooler. But the fact that the league isn't willing to at least right now open up those doors and show us, then make what's already your marquee first round a little bit spicier with some play-ins, or I don't want to say like make it gimmicky, but like, if what if we had a situation like the PWHL where you could pick your opponent in round one? I don't think that would ever happen because most managers, like, they don't have the marbles to do it and call out a team to pick them. But man, it would be pretty entertaining. You know, if two teams are tied, you get to pick. If you're the higher seed, you get to pick which one you want to face. I don't know. Like, there's different ways to do it and make it a little bit spicier.
Yeah, I've been throwing them out. I've been looking at NBA. I've been looking at Major League Baseball. It's there's different options, and I kind of like what you just said there about a potential play-in round. But we'll see. We'll see.
That's like my new tagline from Quads. My new tagline is, I kind of like what you just said. Jeez, thanks a lot for having me.
I still don't understand the NBA in-season tournament, but one day I will. One day I'll completely understand how it works. One day.
Hey, I have some news.
Okay.
I'm spending the first round of the playoffs in Vancouver.
Okay. Nice. We're going to get you in studio, I hope.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hanging with the Canucks and the Vancouver market. I've said from Jump Street this season, I liked what you guys were building in Van with the Canucks, and I want to see what it looks like in person in the first round.
Well, I'm excited that you're going to be here, and we're going to have to take you out around Vancouver. There's some good spots. We'll take you out. It's going to be a good time. Thanks so much for doing this today, Frank.
See you guys.
There he is, Frank Cervella. You can find him all over dailyfaceoff.com, and you're going to find him all over Canucks Conversation during the first round of the playoffs. News to us, but that's exciting. Like, that's going to be a good awesome time. Yeah, it's going to be great having Frank in studio and everything.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's talk about tonight's game. The Arizona Coyotes and the Vancouver Canucks at Mullet Arena. Archer Seelovs gets the start against the Coyotes. That's one thing that I wanted to kind of double back to about the game. On my list of players who disappointed me is Casey DeSmith. Did not like the start for Casey DeSmith. Obviously, he makes that huge save on the first goal. He made the huge save and then sweeps the puck under his glove. that's just a mistake you don't want to make. And then I thought he got beat from distance a few times. I didn't like the goals that he gave up. Again, it's not his fault that they lost, because there was odd man rushes. There was some prime scoring opportunities, but it did feel like a game where if you had Thatcher Demko in net, or hell, even Casey DeSmith every game except for that one, the way he's played lately, you probably have a much closer game on your hands.
For sure. I'll also say this, pivoting back to the game. One of the other areas where I was disappointed beyond the obvious of, hey, each time it felt like they had an opportunity to get back into the game, like the 2-1 Hoglander goal, or Hughes' second goal that made it 5-3, I believe. They immediately allowed a goal in the next shift. Obviously, that's a backbreaker. But beyond that, I also don't think their push in the final two periods. Yeah, they controlled play. Yeah, they had a lot of time in the offensive zone. But you expect that because they're down three goals. That's when score effects kick in. I don't know that they generated enough true grade A chances. Like, you think about how when Vegas was rolling, when the game was tight at any point, Vegas just flattened Vancouver and they were generating chances at will. They came at Vancouver in waves. It felt like Jack Eichel had the puck on a string, right? How dangerous did he look? Seven shots, just completely took over the game. Nobody on Vancouver was really able to do that. Quinn Hughes tried his best from the back end, but Drans pointed this out in his article today. According to Natural Stat Trick, the Canucks only had four high danger chances at 5-on-5 through the final 40 minutes. And so you also think back to last time the Canucks played LA, only one shot in the first 15 minutes while trailing. And it was only when the Canucks pulled the goalie, got the extra tacker, that they actually started to look dangerous generating. And then I think back to a team like Colorado, for example, where the Canucks went up 3-0 against them. Horrible start for Colorado, but they were able to flip the switch. And you could tell how the momentum in the game changed as soon as they got the one goal, and how they kept coming in waves, and they had a player in McKinnon that could sort of take over. I looked at Vancouver's sort of pushback, and look, I'm glad that they converted on at least a power play goal. That's nice to see them scoring and on the man advantage in back-to-back games. But outside of that, it felt like they were just spamming a lot of point shots, a lot of hopeful shots from distance, trying to get some redirects and bounces. And yeah, I understand that's their primary offensive strategy. It's paid dividends this year. They're good at it. But I don't think they got into the slot well enough. And of course, part of it is Vegas defends really well. But this is, as we talk about this team in the playoffs, you're going to, look, you may not have an absolute stinker in the first period, but whether it's situations where you come out flat or you get a couple bounces against you, a couple bad goals, a couple bad penalty calls, you're going to end up trailing in games. And sometimes it's going to be by multiple goals. Do you have that next gear to tap into offensively? And that's where I still don't know if the Canucks have that. I think they were fortunate to score three goals, to be quite honest with you. Like, yep, the Hoglander goal, for instance, 2-1. Like, that's a puck Logan Thompson should probably cover. I think their Canucks were pretty fortunate for the puck to end up in that situation. The second Hughes goal, for example, from a weird angle, again, I think that's one Thompson should have too. So I didn't like that there wasn't enough of an offensive push either, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, I also say on the other side of that, I don't think Vegas should have had six. Like, I think it should have been a lot
for
closer.
Sure.
But again, you're right that the Canucks maybe shouldn't have had three. So you balance it out, and it's a similar ending to the game as we saw last night. Elias Pettersson didn't get a point on it, but he did some really good work on that Hoglander goal. I saw a lot of people dumping on Elias Pettersson. Look, my list is long, and don't get me wrong, he's on the list, but he's pretty damn low on the list of players who disappointed me last night. Again, I don't want to do it again. I don't want to do the whole Pettersson conversation. It was frustrating to see Jack Eichel take over a game like that. Like, you need more from Pettersson, but my list of guys who I need more from is super long. And yeah, you want more from your star player. Of course you do. But man, it's a long list. And I don't think zeroing in on Elias Pettersson is really worth our time today. Again, there's going to be days where we do. I've done it a lot this season. I don't want to hear any new fans or new listeners of the show saying, oh, you never want to criticize Pettersson. I've done it plenty this season, and I'm going to continue to. I just don't think it's worth it after that game.
Yeah, it's one of those scenarios where the people that are pointing out that Pettersson is a star player, that since February, since the All-Star break, hasn't consistently been good enough that we haven't seen the game breaker version of him that we saw for all of last season, for example. I think that is 100% a valid criticism. But if we're specifically zeroing in on this Vegas game, they had much bigger problems than Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, exactly. So again, we'll get to it. We'll talk about Pettersson. We've done it a lot this season and we'll continue to, but not today. Harm, let's get to our Light the Lamp contest brought to you by 4Winds Brewing. Vancouver is playing Arizona tonight. We want to know who's going to score the first goal for Vancouver. If you nail it, you could win a $25 gift card to the 4Winds Tap Room located at 72nd and River Road in Delta. Enter by following us on social media, keep an eye out for today's show clip, and comment who you think will light the lamp and score the first goal tonight. Winners will be contacted directly. Check us out at Canucks Army on Twitter, at CanucksArmy.com on Instagram, and Canucks Army on Facebook. And make sure you ask about 4Winds Light Lager at your local liquor store or have some delivered to your front door through the online shop at 4windsbrewing.ca. Okay, Harm, I'm going with Nils Åman.
Okay, bold, very bold. Now watch him not even draw into the lineup and it's PDG in instead.
So are you picking PDG?
No, absolutely not. I will go with, look, I want to manifest good vibes for you in your bet. So I'm going to go with Quinn Hughes.
Oh, that's the thing. Quinn Hughes, 2 goals last night. We were, like we said yesterday, we went golfing with Faber on Monday and we were talking about how, yeah, I'm fully prepared to lose this bet that Hughes is going to get to 20 goals. But man, 2 goals last night sure makes it interesting with 7 games.
And the crossbar.
And the crossbar, like nearly a hat trick. And I don't know if Faber did something to Quinn. I don't know if Quinn has a bone to pick with Faber and Quinn knows about the bet now and he's just turning it on another level. I know I joked about it, but I promise I didn't go up to Quinn and tell him that he's got to start scoring because I need to win this bet. I promise I didn't do that. So I don't know. I'm glad he's shooting. I'm glad he's shooting. And I hope he scores some goals because that would be really funny if at the 11th hour, Quinn hits 20 goals on the dot. That would be phenomenal. A hat trick tonight against Arizona would bring him within 2 with 6 games to go. So let's see it. I like it. Quinn Hughes, first goal scorer tonight. Good pick, Harm. Looking at Arizona, this is a must-win game, I think, for the Canucks. Someone called it a must-win when it came to winning the Pacific. This is just a game where you struggled against Vegas. Your effort wasn't good enough. You need to put the hammer down against a low in the standings team like Arizona. You need to put the hammer down and you need to take down this team tonight.
Okay, must win is a little strong. I'll say must respond game, right? Sure. And that leaves some room for if you play well, but maybe you don't get saves or you just don't get the bounces that, especially on the second leg of a back-to-back. Like, if this was any other scenario and there were a rested team going up against Arizona, then you would say, oh yeah, there's no excuse for losing this one. And in this case, again, it's still a must-respond game. Like, this isn't me saying, oh, they're on the second leg of a back-to-back, so doesn't matter how they play. They could lose, and I'm not going to care. That's not the point I'm trying to make. It's just that you leave a little bit of flexibility for the final outcome because you can't control that per se. But the effort itself, especially defensively and clamping down, hopefully for young goaltender who's still trying to sort of gain his confidence in the NHL, who looked good against Anaheim, they need to respond well from that perspective.
Absolutely. Anything you want to say about the game beyond that before we get to anyone else?
I mean, I'm just a little disappointed in Arizona fading. And I know this doesn't relate to the game itself, but I'm disappointed that Arizona completely fell off the map in the playoff race and sort of became a bottom feeder again, essentially, because in the first half, they looked like a team that, not that anybody expected them to actually make the playoffs, but would be one of those teams like St. Louis is right now, where they're on the fringes, they're semi making things interesting, maybe not really, but they're at least competitive on a night-to-night basis, and they're making some teams sweat a little bit, and that just hasn't happened. They've fallen off completely in the second half, and I know recently they've picked up some wins, but they're nowhere near the playoff race, and that's a little bit disappointing. And of course, it doesn't help that at the deadline, they sold some pieces like Dumba and Zucker, so that are a weaker team because of that. But now you look at them on paper and like you're in a situation where you've got Michael Kesselring in the top four. You're in a situation where Logan Cooley, who I would argue has been slightly underwhelming in terms of how high rookie expectations were for him. He's centering your second line and you're relying a ton on some young players that, aren't fully proven. Yeah, they've been scoring a lot of goals lately, so you're going to have to take them seriously. But big picture, I'm a little bit disappointed that Arizona couldn't follow through on their promising first half and be more competitive.
Yeah, we were talking about them as a wild card team. It felt like all season long, and absolutely, they just fell off in the second half. Calgary, similar kind of story. Like when Kuzmenko got traded there, they were like 3 points out of a playoff spot or something like that, and they've completely fallen off. So, anyways, people are asking. I got to introduce the segment. Anyone else? Presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter the code NATION25. That's all capital letters NATION and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms do apply. Make sure you check out DoorDash. You got double dash on there. One delivery fee, multiple orders, multiple restaurants or stores. Can't get much better than that, folks. DoorDash. NATION25 is the promo code for your first order. All right, I'm going to start with this one, Harm. It's not really a baseball question, but this is a good one. Alec Taylor asking, Quads, what's more impressive, a shutout or a no-hitter? And obviously, I it means shutout in hockey. It's no-hitter, and it's... Karen Versation right below said not even remotely close. A no-hitter is rare. There's a lot of shutouts that happen. No-hitters don't just happen. Unless you face the Toronto Blue Jays 82 times a year, then you might get a few more. But, and I said 82. There's 160 games in the MLB season. Wow, I'm all over the place today. See, I'm getting my sports mixed up, Harm. This is what happens in this month where I'm watching a lot of baseball and I'm watching a lot of hockey. It's doing a lot to me. I like the summer when I can focus on just baseball, and I like the fall. A little bit past the fall, winter, when I can just focus on hockey. I'm struggling right now to focus on two sports at once like this. But anyways, people ask.
Well, one of them is your job. One of them is your job. The other you don't actually have to pay attention to.
Totally. I just watch hockey for fun. Anyways, let's go back to the hockey talk, of course. This is an interesting one. I'll ask this to you, Harm. It's from RP88 in the YouTube live chat. What factors do you think have stunted Besser's amount of scoring lately?
I mean, part of it was just shooting percentage aggression, right? In the first half, he was riding a heater, and we expected a bit of a slowdown. I think lately he's been a little less noticeable, maybe in part, at least for the last couple of games, because he's playing with Elias Pettersson, and Pettersson isn't really driving play. He's not creating a lot of looks for Besser the way that, for instance, like JT Miller will control a puck down low and he'll consistently find Besser in slot, right? Besser's job on a line isn't to carry the puck. It's not to transport it. It's not to be dynamic. It's not to draw defenders. It's to lurk in the offensive zone and get open and rely on, hey, somebody's going to get me the puck. And when I do, I'm going to be a lethal finisher. And so part of it is that, okay, in the last couple of games, he's been playing with Miller, and at 5-on-5, his offensive looks have dried up. And again, I don't think that's necessarily his fault. But outside of that, I mean, I don't think he, I'm trying to pull up the numbers now. I don't think his production has fallen off too precipitously. Of course, it has slowed down since the All-Star break. I'm going to do the math right now real quick. Okay, maybe a little bit more than I expected. Yeah, he's got 8 goals and 18 points in 26 games, but also part of that is the territory that comes with being a sniper. You're going to go through ebbs and flows, and when you're hot, you're going to have bunches and stretches where you're going to score, let's say, 15 goals in 22 games or something ridiculous like that, or 15 goals in 25 games. And then you're going to have other stretches where you're going to have 5 goals in 16 games. And it's not like this consistent, okay, if you're scoring at half a goal per game, that means you're going to score half a goal per game throughout all 82 games. So I'm not too concerned about Besser, honestly. I think whenever he gets back with JT, or if Pettersson gets going, I think he just needs that playmaker to unlock his production.
Tonight feels like it needs to be a get-right game for the Canucks, for Elias Pettersson, you know, for a lot of players on that team. It feels like tonight needs to be a night that they're just ready to go and ready, like I said, to put the hammer down. Okay, we had a question about Abbotsford, so I'll just point to CanucksArmy.com because Tyson Cole went out there last night, had some conversations with Elias Pettersson, had some conversations with Jonathan Lekaramäki, and also Jeremy Colleton. A lot of good coverage right now over at CanucksArmy.com. So shameless plug, but if you want to read more about Abbotsford and what those guys are up to right now, we've got a lot of stuff on the site. Abbotsford plays again tonight, and Tyson's headed back out there. So maybe some more stories coming out of Abbotsford. But there was one thing that I wanted to bring up, and that was that Jonathan Lekaramäki got hit along the boards, and it was a heavy hit, and Elias Pettersson coming right to his defense, and that there's some snarl in this kid's game, and that's a big part of Elias Pettersson's game. We know he's more of a defensive defenseman than anything else, and he also isn't afraid to mix it up there. Again, Elias Pettersson maybe drops the gloves one day. I don't think any of us thought we'd be saying that, but it might happen. It might happen one day.
Just wait for Elias Pettersson to stick up for a hit on Elias Pettersson.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Can you imagine the headlines? Elias Pettersson sticks up for Elias Pettersson.
That's great. Hey, we once had Pavel Bure sticks up for Pavel Bure in this town. Yeah. So maybe it's not going to be the first time we've had that kind of headline. But anyways, moving right past that. Grady, pull this one up. I put this in the... put this in there. I like this tweet from Jay Fresh. Harm, I don't know if you saw this. He's looking at the best and worst defense pairs of all time. From 2007-08 season to 2023-2024, Dan Hamhuis and Kevin Bieksa pairing was in the top. Like, that was in the top. Dead last, the worst pairing of the modern era of the NHL, and I don't know if you call it the modern era, since 2007-2008. With at least 1,000 minutes together, the worst defensive pair of all time, Ben Hutton and Eric Gudbranson, is the worst defensive pairing we have ever seen in the NHL from the 2007-2008 season to the 2023-2024 season. Look, I think this is just great validation for so many Canucks fans out there, Harm, who were watching the games during this time and saying, man, this does feel like it's one of the worst pairings. No, it's literally the absolute worst defensive pairing of all time. And I keep saying of all time, but since 2007, 2008, 2023, 2024.
So it is all time. It's all time for us, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. All time since I've been watching hockey. That's for damn sure. But it just, I had to bring that up because it feels like validation years in the making for Canucks fans who watched that era of Canucks hockey.
I remember when that trade was made and legitimately there was so much promise for that pair because Hutton, I think it was after his rookie season where a lot of people were excited that, okay, this guy can move the puck. He has some offensive touch. And okay, if you pair him with the big, heavy stay-at-home defenseman, they're going to mesh with each other so well. I remember there being so much optimism for that defense pair going into the season. And night after night, it was disaster after disaster after disaster. Yeah, I'm glad we're not watching that deep pair anymore. I also thought it was hilarious that OEL Myers from last season was was it last season or the year before?
Two seasons ago.
Yeah. No, it was last season, wasn't it?
Well, it uses the whole sample, right?
Right. Like
it wasn't specific seasons. It was just those guys together. So they were really bad. If you recall, they were really bad 2 seasons ago. And then they were, I would say, worse last year. Like, I think they were worse last year because if I recall correctly, Harmon, there was a flash there where that pairing actually didn't look too bad under Bruce Boudreau.
Two years ago, actually, they were totally fine. I remember, like, they weren't bad 2 years ago. It was last season where they were disastrous because 2 years ago they were around break even in controlling shots and chances and goals, and they were going up against the other team's top lines. It's last year where they completely fell off a cliff.
So,
but yeah, I thought it was interesting they were on there too.
If it's the whole sample size and you're saying they were even adequate 2 seasons ago, that means they were that bad last year that if you just looked at last year, they may be even higher on that list, which is crazy to think about that there were two Canucks defense pairs from the past like 5-10 years on there. But anyways, I wanted to make sure I got that in there. Okay, let's see. We got Yeah, I love this. There's so much reaction to me pulling that out just in the YouTube live chat. So many people are giving their thank you Jims, the Jimbo special, all that sort of stuff. Just great. And people talking about the worst blunders of the Benning era. Another one being brought up by Jeremy Lee, keeping Vertanen and Pearson over Tanev and Toffoli. Take your pick. There's a lot to choose from that era. But hey, it's over now. He can't hurt you anymore, Canucks fans. You've got a different gym in town, and things are looking good as we look toward the future a little bit here. And this one, Harm, we'll close out on this one. This one from Top G in the YouTube live chat. Are the Canucks a Lindholm away from being a wagon again? I'll answer it. Which Lindholm? The Lindholm that they thought they were getting, or the Lindholm that really has been around all season in Calgary, and the Lindholm that has been in Vancouver? And that meaning a pretty ineffective Elias Lindholm. Yes, fine defensively. Good in the faceoff dot, helping them there. I don't think they're that Elias Lindholm away from being a wagon again. I think they might need a little bit more. And hey, they might need some dumb luck like they were getting at the start of the year.
Yeah, it would still at least raise the floor of your bottom six, right? Even in a worst case scenario where you get Lindholm back and he's not the player that you expected offensively, at least from a defensive perspective, it's a huge upgrade from, let's say, Archie Baines in the lineup right now, right? The jump up from a quad A NHL player to a serviceable middle six guy, if that's what Lindholm ends up being, is still a substantial step forward. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to single-handedly fix things, but he is still an important piece and part of this lineup because clearly... Yeah, like Pod Colson's been fine since coming up, and he's definitely been better than Baines. But clearly, the Canucks don't have a lot of forward depth beyond Pod Colson in terms of, okay, if they run into more injuries, who can they potentially call upon?
We're going to close on this one from Karen Versation, who says, they're a January Elias Pettersson away from being a wagon, and I think I'm going to have to agree with that one as we close it out. Any disagreement there, Harm?
No. That would be a massive help.
Yeah, exactly. That's the internal lift you need. And someone earlier said as well, I found this interesting. I know I was talking about, not too worried about the 5-on-5 play, all that sort of stuff. Someone said, I'm not going to criticize Elias Pettersson until he is ineffective in the playoffs. I think that might be a pretty sound way to look at things, but I think I'm still going to give my thoughts on Elias Pettersson's play through these final seven games. There'll be six more games after tonight, and we'll be back tomorrow to break it all down. But for now, signing off for my co-host Harmon Dial and our technical producer Greedy Sass, my name is Dave Bugelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.